So this is the modern email dev room, and I think I'm talking about something rather old, and that is star TLS. So this talk is titled Why TLS is Better Without Star TLS, a security analysis of star TLS in the email context. And this is based on research I've done some years back with Damian, so one of your lovely organizers here, Hanno Böck and Sebastian Schinzel, and my name is Fabian Ising. So since I have the honors of starting off this whole, well, the whole dev room, I want to give you a quick overlook of at least the client side of the email ecosystem. And this is a graphic I have designed for my dissertation, and so bear with me that the legend might not fit the context really. But that's basically, well, it's hard to read in that resolution, but this is basically a lot of the RFCs that go into the email ecosystem. No worries, I'll cut that down a bit. And I've basically identified three categories. One is network protocols. This is where we'll spend most of the time of this talk. So this is SMTP, POP3, IMAP, and nowadays JMAP, not included in the graphic yet, sorry for that. Formatting, such as Internet Message Format, and MIME, so the multipurpose Internet Mail Extensions. And lastly, end-to-end encryption, like SMIME and OpenPGP, which probably no one uses. That's really here. So in total, that makes up more than 150 RFCs. Yes, some of them are obsoleted, some of them are deprecated. But if you really want to get the whole gist of that, just the client side of the email ecosystem, you will probably have to read a lot of them. And I've done that. Been there, done that. So, and that's only one side of the medal, of course. There's also implementations. So over the course of my research, I've looked at more than 48 clients and more than 23 servers. And this is by far not all of them. So, and that's just the implementations I could get my hands on, and not counting the ones I found on the internet where I really can't tell if that is one of the 23 or it isn't. Okay. Since I also have the honors of starting off this protocol session of the email dev room, I wanted to give you a quick, well, introduction to how an email gets from our sender Alice to our receiver Bob. So let's assume that both use some kind of mail user agent, or what you would normally call a mail client. So for example, Mozilla Thunderbird. So both also need a so-called mail service provider. That might be something commercial, like mailbox.org or even Gmail, you know. And, well, that's basically necessary to get one email from the sender to the receiver. So Alice will first have to configure her MSP's MSA, or mail sending agent. So what she has to do in her mail client is basically fill out some kind of dialogue like this, put in a server, put in a port, and choose an encryption mechanism. Let's say, for the sake of this talk, that she chooses star TLS, or the auto-configuration told her to do star TLS, which happens a lot of the time. So then she will be able to submit that over SMTP, or submission, if you want to be pedantic, to the MSA. And Bob will have to do the same configuration with the mail delivery agent of his MSP to be able to connect via POP3 and IMAP. Yeah, and then he will receive the mail, obviously. So this is where we will stop for the sake of this talk. So I'll be looking at the first and the last hop only. However, I don't want to leave you hanging. So what's happening in between is mail transfer agent to mail transfer agent communication, which happens over SMTP. And I already put here be dragons there. And whoever has looked into that knows what I mean by that, because that's generally, from a security standpoint, considered to be a pretty hazardous field, just to the reasons how DNS interacts with that and how TLS works or doesn't work there, and so on and so on. So that's not what we will be looking at during this talk. However, I think the first and the last hop are, from a user standpoint, the most important hops, simply because your credentials are submitted over that. That means that you really, really want to have those connections encrypted via TLS if possible. Or not only if possible, you want to do that. Okay, let me give you a quick introduction to IMAP, because that's what I'll be basing my examples on, and on star TLS. So every IMAP connection begins with the client connecting to the server on a specific port and receiving a greeting back. This greeting consists of this asterisk and then a status code, in this case okay, and usually a list of capabilities. In this case, the server says, I'm able to speak IMAP 4 revision 1, and I'm able to do the auth login mechanism. So far, so good. The client will then send tagged commands, which consist of a tag and a command, as you might have guessed, and will usually receive some kind of data in response. So that's called an untagged response. And in this case, these are, again, the capabilities we've already seen in the greeting. And finally, to signal that the server is done with processing this command, they will send a tagged response with the same tag. OK, so far, so easy. Now, how does StarTLS work? This is basically the same as you've seen before. The client connects to some port, usually for IMAP it's 143, via plaintext TCP connection. And now the server sends the StarTLS capability. So that's the last capability here. And usually removes all the login capabilities because we don't want to have clients log in via plaintext. And then they will negotiate StarTLS. So the client will say, hey, I really want to speak StarTLS. The server says, yes, OK, we can do that. Then they'll do the TLS handshake, and everything after that is encrypted. OK, all our attacks happen here. So we assume that the attacker is a meddler in the middle that can listen on the network connections, that can modify packets, insert additional packets, and so on. But there will be no meddling with the TLS handshake, no trying to change any ciphertext, and so on and so on. So everything still happens in plain text. OK, at this point, you might be asking, so what is there even for an attacker to do? Well, an attacker could, for example, change this, or remove this, change this status code, add something here, or really do anything in between. So there's actually a lot of room for stuff to do. All of this accumulated in a Usenix Security 2021 paper with the same title as this talk. And as I've said, this is a paper from 2021. So most of the bugs I'll be showing you today are hopefully fixed. For most of them, we know that they are. For some of them, we are not 100% sure. But most of them are fixed by now. So the questions we set out to ask were, first, are modern clients opportunistic? So StarTLS has the reputation of being an opportunistic encryption protocol. So basically, only if the client and the server can agree to do encryption, then they will do encryption. And otherwise, well, they will probably talk in plain text. This should never be the case for client-to-server communication. This is where this MTA-to-MTA communication falls into place. That is usually opportunistic, hopefully not as much anymore as it was in the past. But for clients-to-servers, you never want to have a plaintext connection, actually. So if there's data sent in plaintext, so let's assume we are doing TLS, but we are sending some data in plaintext before that. And we wanted to know if there's any sensitive data sent in plain text to the server or to the client. Third question was, so if there's some data sent in the plain text, is it retained in the encrypted and authenticated context after the TLS handshake? So does anything slip over from one context into the next one? And finally, what happens in error cases? Specifically, we looked at alert mechanisms like the IMAP's alert code, which you will see in a moment. All right. To answer these questions, what we did was threefold. So we built the email analysis security toolkit. I always forget what the acronym stands for. I'm not sure. It's EAST, and it's on GitHub. I'll put the link later. So what we did was built an almost full-fledged IMAP SMTP POP3 server to automate tests on virtual machines where we installed mail clients. So basically, you can write a config file, define what do you want the server to answer to specific messages, and if you don't, it does what a normal server would do, and otherwise, it will return whatever you told them to. So the second one was we wrote some scripts for IPv4 internet scanning to scan for a specific vulnerability on the internet. And finally, we built also some local test scripts with which you can test your own implementations or your local installations. All right. So what were the key findings? The first finding was that clients can be tricked into not using StarTLS at all. So they will leak credentials or emails. So what you see on the right-hand side is the classic StarTLS stripping attack. So basically, you remove the StarTLS capability from the greeting. Then the client might still want to do StarTLS, so you just tell it, no, you can't do that. All of that happens in plain text, so why should the client not log in? This, thankfully, doesn't work in most of the clients nowadays. So all of the StarTLS stripping attacks, we found some of them, but usually they're not a problem anymore. However, we rediscovered a problem related to the pre-auth greeting. So the pre-auth greeting is used whenever the server can authenticate the client over some other channel. For example, people apparently use IMAP over SSH. And then you're already authenticated over SSH, so no need to re-authenticate to your IMAP server. So the client would receive this greeting from the server, which tells them, well, you are already authenticated. The client would then do start TLS. Wait a second. The IMAP RFC states that the start TLS command is only valid in the not authenticated state. So they really can't do that here anymore. And most clients didn't. So of course they won't log in then, because why would they? They are already authenticated. However, many clients decided to upload sent and drafted emails after that, because they are already authenticated, so they'll, and their send folder is missing for some reason, so let's just upload that in plain text. So this worked in 15 out of 28 clients we tested. Thankfully, only one library we tested, so one client library, was meant to be opportunistic. So opportunistic start TLS is really not a thing in clients anymore. That's at least fortunate. So the second key finding was that many clients process unauthenticated data that appears before the TLS handshake. So for example, we injected this alert message from IMAP, which then looks like this, an example, for example, in Microsoft Outlook. This looks pretty real to me if I look at it, and it also helpfully highlights links for us. So you can't do HTML in there or something, but you can still highlight links. So I might be tempted to click on that if the link looks somewhat convincing as well. So we found another case of that. You can basically, all of these untagged responses I've shown you before are only somewhat bound to a specific command. So you can basically inject them at any point before the TLS handshake. And this results, for example, in, this is, I think it's Thunderbird, creating an attacker-controlled folder in your mailbox. And this stays even after the hijack connection. Also not too great. So we were able to do this in at least 11 out of 28 clients. So still a lot. So what concerned us most was the last finding, that several servers were vulnerable to a long-known bug. So this bug was first detected by Vice Venema in his Postfix SMTP implementation in 2011, so more than 10 years ago. Should be fixed by now, right? So this was first described for SMTP, but we have described it also for IMAP and POP3, and it's pretty straightforward that that should be the case, that this is also a problem there. And basically what happens is the attacker injects a second command after the start TLS command in the same TCP segment. So basically this BNOOP shouldn't really be there. So, and what happens usually for servers is that they read the whole buffer, so they read the whole socket into an application buffer, all data that is available, read both commands, process the start TLS command, send an AOK to that, do the TLS handshake, and that BNOOP remains in the application buffer to be handled after the TLS handshake. And at this point, it's intransparent to the server that this wasn't sent over TLS, and this was basically sent by the attacker. So they'll also answer after the TLS handshake. So we were able to do that in 8 out of 23 servers. Remember, this is a 10-year-old bug. And over the course of the 10 years, more than 16 of the 23 servers were vulnerable at one point. So basically, this is a widespread problem. So we thought about that and thought, well, we can straightforwardly extend that to clients as well. Because if we can inject a command, why shouldn't we be able to inject a response? So we did that and found 16 out of 28 clients basically vulnerable to the same bug, simply because it wasn't described before for clients. So what's the impact of that? We were able to do credential stealing in IMAP and SMTP, stealing sent and drafted emails in both protocols. We were able to tamper with the mailbox in both protocols that have mailboxes, do UI spoofing in all three protocols, and we're even able to do HTTPS hosting under the IMAP certificate of the server, which is pretty bad. So what can we do about that? Our first recommendation for users was to disable start TLS in their clients. And I think that's still sensible. So not disable it totally, but switch to implicit TLS. Please don't do plain text. So do implicit TLS instead. But we realize this might not be a workable solution for server developers and MSPs. So if you really must use StarTLS, you should isolate the plaintext phase completely from the TLS phase, from the encrypted phase, fix the buffering issues in the process, hopefully, and as a protocol measure, we should really streamline the negotiation and lock down what is allowed before the TLS handshake. So only accept the bare minimum of messages before the actual TLS handshake. So as a final note, a quick thank you to all the developers of open source mail clients. Your response time to our bug reports was phenomenal, much, much better than the commercial ones. So if you want to test your own clients or your own servers, all our testing scripts are available. We're happy for any pull requests. It's pull request, not push request. This is the QR code. I'll post it in the Matrix chat after. So in conclusion, StarTLS only extends the attack surface. Not only do you want TLS, but you don't really want StarTLS. StarTLS issues are widespread among implementations, and cross-protocol attacks are possible, for example, against HTTPS. So in conclusion, TLS is better without StarTLS. Thank you.
Is there any questions in the room or in the chat which somebody wants to relay? Raise your hand and I come with a microphone. I see people are impressed.
Hi. Alexei, when we were doing IMAP for revision 2, I got some of your comments. Did we fix all of
can
these?
You,
or most
can you reopen
of these?
The PDF, please? There's a slide on that. I can do that. Oh, are we at the beginning or at the end? So yeah, IMAP 4 revision 2 fixed at least most of the stuff. So pre-auth, there's a warning for that. Clients must require TLS, or clients that require TLS must close the connection. So no more problems with pre-auth, hopefully. Alert responses got a warning. And I think this one is a specific comment on the buffering issues. What's missing from my point of view is a comment for the clients to do that as well. So this client only mentions servers, but the response injection is not handled in the IMAP RFC currently. That's the only thing that's missing from my point of view.
Okay, thank you.
If there's a question. This will be a spotty day for me.
So can you say something about the general security of email? When I send an email to you, can I reasonably trust that it's encrypted all the way?
That really depends on all the MTAs in between. So I wouldn't make any general comment on that. Hopefully, if you're using a somewhat securely configured mail server, and I'm using a somewhat securely configured mail server, that should work. But I wouldn't count on it for all the servers on the internet. So basically, from our scans, we know that many servers are not securely configured.
All right. Not sure if you have time for one more question, if there's one, or otherwise, we proceed. Looking at the timekeeping, or is there any final question? Then I think let's switch. Thank you, and thanks, Fabian, again.